This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
As far as omens go, were you disturbed by the injury news Rick Hahn shared at the opening of training camp? Even if Yasmani Grandal with a calf strain, Lucas Giolito with a chest muscle, and Gio Gonzalez with a sore shoulder are out just a week, does it shake your 2020 confidence in which injury seems the most bothersome?
Wow. Yeah, I would worry most about Gio Gonzalez because it's a shoulder. To answer the last question first, Grandal was still catching guys. It's just a calf strain. Didn't sound terribly serious. Lucas Giolito, apparently, this is a fallout from the flu. So he had some bad flu, which caused him to miss the Sox Fest. And this is a sore rib or some issue with his rib. Listen, you know, this is your big money free agent who's going to change the pitching staff and the catcher, and then that's your ace of the staff who had his breakthrough last year. You want nothing wrong with that. And of course, you talk about Gio Gonzalez, you know, you worry about him with his age. A sore shoulder seems to be the most serious of the injuries, because last I heard, you need one when you're pitching. But none of this is good. And as far as omens go, this is, you know, this is like a crow swooping down to pick up a black cat right in front of you. I mean, this just doesn't portend a glorious, wondrous playoff run. It's like, oh, gulp, here we go, White Sox issues. No, it's not a good omen.
If it was just one guy, I think you could be just, I'll dismiss it and kind of read past it and not even discuss it. But when you have three mild injuries, it becomes sort of a major nuisance, especially on day one, because you've got some guys in one corner of the clubhouse talking about, well, we're going to get to the World Series, and that's a realistic goal. Thank you, James McCann, for setting the expectations so high. And then the other part of the story in the other end of the clubhouse are guys kind of getting in line for the MRI machine. That's not good, but it's also not something to overreact to necessarily. I heard this, and I was maybe a little bit more than mildly concerned about the direction this kind of suggests. But I don't want to overreact. You want to be very careful not to say, all right, now that the Sox are doomed and Gio Gonzalez is going to make 5 starts for them, and, you know, boy, this means Lucas Giolito can't duplicate the kind of success and consistency. So take a deep breath, take a step back. Maybe that's the case. But it reminds us on day one that maybe it's a little bit too early to get too carried away. Your confidence is shaken a bit, but it's a little bit early to be maybe talking World Series, but not too soon to be reminded that all that optimism, that is healthy and good and productive. It's still cautious optimism.
Well, and Rick Hahn better keep sending the chain letter.
I don't believe in omens. I don't believe in magic or tarot or Buddha or Elvis or anything like that. So, you know, it's hard for me to jump to too
Elvis?
Many.
You don't believe in Buddha? Like, he didn't exist? You don't believe in Elvis?
No.
That was made up too?
Yeah, I don't believe in the idea of an Elvis. We'll get more into it later
strange.
If you'd like.
Yeah.
You don't want to, but we can. I don't believe in any. I'm not a superstitious guy. I'm just not. You know, that's. That being said, I don't like the idea of Lucas Giolito having any sort of injury related to his body. Whether it's,
yes, there you go. I like it.
Whether it's an upper body, a lower body, a brain injury, anything like that. I don't want Lucas Giolito to be in any kind of bad shape. He is arguably the most important player on this team, not only based on what he did last year, the platform he made for himself to ascend even higher. We're hoping, as White Sox fans, as baseball fans in general, hopefully, even the ones that aren't White Sox fans, want to see him continue to get better and better because he was so entertaining to watch last year, and he's a great guy. So I don't want him to have a chest muscle injury or any injury whatsoever. That's probably the most bothersome to me. In terms of Grandal, calf strain, you know, it's, what, 6-7 weeks till opening day. I'm not that hung up on that. Gio Gonzalez is not a vital player for this team. He missed some time with a dead arm last year. Maybe, you know, at his advanced age, it's just something they're going to have to deal with. Giving him periodical rest and kind of stringing him along to make him last throughout the entire season. But no, it's not an omen. It's not anything ominous. There are no black clouds over Camelback Ranch, I hope, at this point. There's usually not any clouds in the sky in Arizona whatsoever at this time of year. But I don't like Lucas Giolito and injury in the same sentence, unless that sentence is Lucas Giolito does not have an injury.
Well, Lucas Giolito with a chest muscle issue is not too concerning to me. I'm okay. There's so much to worry about over the course of 162 games in a baseball season that I'm not going to sweat the small stuff. And I look at these injuries, these three injuries, they are two significant players, yes, but I'm going to consider this all small stuff. Now, if I have to pick what's the most bothersome, as we have here in the 5-5 question, I'm going to go with Gio Gonzalez and the sore shoulder, because, I mean, of all the body parts a pitcher needs, a shoulder's pretty essential. But hopefully this is just something that is soreness and goes away very soon.
Well, the guy on this list that you White Sox fans and fans of baseball in Chicago, you can't Lucas Giolito. You got to have Lucas Giolito. Okay, that's the guy of these three. I mean, you have a backup / all-star in McCann. Now, based on what the injuries are, I'd be most concerned if it is something to be concerned about with Gio Gonzalez, a shoulder and a pitcher, always not exactly what you want to hear. And unless they were using bad B-roll yesterday, I mean, it looked like Grandal was catching yesterday, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, if he's got a, why is he catching? I was confused.
That would lead
by
you
that.
To believe that it's you know, this calf muscle strain is not so bad, right?
You're just supposed to work through it?
I guess so.
He just can't
That's
run on
That's a good
on
thing.
It. He can't run.
This is a positive.
He could crouch, but
he
can't crouch,
run. But can't run.
Yeah. Can he throw his bat?
Good eyes, though. Very observant. I did not notice that when I was watching the B-roll. I just kind of got lulled into the background and the White Sox and, boy, pitchers and catchers reporting. And Dustin's like, hey, look at him. He's catching. He's faking it.
I just didn't know if it was old B-roll or current B-roll. Or
they wouldn't have old B-roll of Yasmani Grandal catching in a White Sox uniform.
And I heard...
Hey, the power of editing, trust me.
And I also heard Chuck Garfine reporting that he was catching
as
well.
Oh, then that...
There we go.
Gospel.
Now it's official.
Now it's official.
Yes, our Chuck.
There's no simple answer to that question, David.
Tyler Chatwood says he feels like he's in the best spot he's been in with the Cubs. Is he a lock for the fifth starter spot, or would he be better coming out of the bullpen for the Cubs?
Well, my first reaction to that was that, it wouldn't be hard to be in the best spot since he came from Colorado to the Cubs, because he's put this team in a lot of bad spots. So if he wants to look at it that way, more power to him. This is as much optimism as he's probably had at spring training since he arrived a couple of years ago. And we were looking at him as this great addition. He fell out of thin air, I think the headline said, from Colorado into the Cubs rotation. So I don't know that there's much more... He's more difficult spots than he could get into. Look, he had a very resurgent 2019, I guess, for him, because he had to go nowhere but up. He was 5-3, 38 games, only made 5 starts. He had respectable numbers. He only pitched in 76 innings. Nasty stuff. If he can control it, if he can be consistent, he can be your fifth starter. I think the direction of the Cubs season is not going to be dictated by a fifth starter, but you'd like to have a serviceable guy in that role. I do like the idea of him maybe being in the bullpen as well, because he proved to be more versatile than we expected last year. And if you get a guy like Alec Mills or Alzolay that can come in and be your fifth starter, maybe it gives you more options with Chatwood. So I would say to be determined. He's been a professional about his role and accepting all of the different ways that the Cubs want to use him. Maybe it's a curse of having such good stuff, but until he can control it consistently, there's going to be an open sort of, I think, a open-mindedness to how you use him. So I think that right now it's in pencil.
Yeah, I think he's got to earn it, right? I mean, I think we got to see control, and we got to see a guy that's not walking people. And if we don't see that, then he's not going to help you in any way, right? I would think he's a lock for the fifth starter spot. I think you go into the season believing that that's him. You go into camp believing he is the guy for that spot. But he's got to prove it. He's got to earn it. He's just nodding to the salary is one thing. You've got to be able to perform. So I'm with you, David. I think it is to be determined. But I'm going with right now fifth starter.
Yeah, I would say fifth starter as well. I would say it's not a big surprise. I know they just reported to camp, so you see the stories about, oh, Tyler Chatwood inside track to get the fifth starter job and this and that. I mean, Tommy Hotovy said this to you at the Cubs convention weeks ago, right, David? I mean, that he was basically, that's the role we envisioned for him. And if you look at the numbers, you look at the rest of this roster, I don't know who else they would put in that spot. I think, you know, they signed Tyler Chatwood a couple of years ago to be a starter. They didn't intend for him to end up in the bullpen like he did last year. That was probably the last thing they wanted after the first year of his deal was an unmitigated disaster. But I'm a little bit bullish on Chatwood this season. I think he's primed for, I don't want to say a big year or a comeback year or anything like that. I think he's going to be a lot better than we've seen of him before, though. And in terms of the stuff that he has, and I mean, that's never been in doubt. That's the reason that Theo gave him that contract. And I think a lot of teams around Major League Baseball would have given him a similar contract from what I have heard. So it's not like Theo was the only one out there that thought Tyler Chatwood could be something. You know, there were people in the organization that told me they could make him into Roy Oswalt if they could get him straight. And obviously that never happened. I don't think that's going to happen at this point. But I do think he's going to bounce back. I think that he's going to maybe not excel. Again, I don't want to get too over my skis here. I just think he's going to be fine. I think Tyler Chatwood is lower on the list of Cubs problems this season than some other things that might pop up. So sure, yeah, put him in that fifth spot. Lock him in there.
It's been rough for Tyler Chatwood on the north side of Chicago, but, you know, 2019, there were flashes of improvement, and there was a combination of spot starts and him coming out of the bullpen where he looked good. I'm not going to say he's a lock for the fifth start because we have Adbert Alzolay also on the Cubs roster, and I think he can compete for that fifth spot. But I don't want to be too down on Chatty, though. Because I think what we saw in those good flashes from in 2019, I mean, there's some salvageable stuff there. So I think he is a potential fifth starter, but he's also a potential guy that can be potentially reliable coming out of the Cubs pen. So I think he's going to be a contributor. I hope there will be improvement, and it doesn't necessarily have to be as the fifth starter, so he does not have it on lock.
I'm going to continue to call him Tyler Chatwalk. I know that's probably mean-spirited, but hey, it's
very mean-spirited.
5:40 in the morning, yeah. We've got snow and
just don't make fun of his hairpiece.
Cold coming.
Exactly. Yeah.
Got a good beard. Most baseball players have bad hair because of the hat. You know, I think what you got to do, though, is because to eliminate excuse-making, either you got to pick a path with this guy. Either be all in with this guy as the starter or make him in the bullpen that needs some help, that needs some arms, okay? You have Alzolay, okay? Why not try him out? He's a starting pitcher, okay? He's a starting pitcher. Have him be the fifth starter and have Chatwalk be the bullpen guy because this is what's going to happen. Chatwalk's going to go be the fifth starter. Alzolay's going to be in the minors. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have to move him to the bullpen. Oh, we got to stretch him out. We got to do this. We got to do that. He didn't know the role. He can't come back-to-back day. Build him up to be able to pitch 3-4 times.
When you've got a rotation, though, with that many guys north of 30, you want to have depth like a guy like Alzolay at Iowa ready to bring up if you have an injury. Don't you?
Okay, I'm just predicting excuse making later on, like because you know who was it? Who was it a couple years ago? I forget the name escapes me. He got the final out of the World Series, right? and you didn't know
Monty.
If he's going to be
Mike Montgomery.
Well, Montgomery, is he going to be a starter?
Some big Cub fan over here.
Is he
going to
be a reliever? Is he going to be this? Is he going to be that? And there are all these excuses of why Mike Montgomery couldn't all of a sudden pitch, right?
You forgot the name of the guy who threw the most important pitch in Cubs history?
I got a lot of stuff going on in my head right now, okay?
What kind of fan are you?
I had to shovel snow.
Never forget Monty.
I don't quite get the question.
Who is the best second baseman on either side of town? Who will be the selection at that position on the All-Chicago team? And will the names change as the season goes on?
This is a good one. I got to tell you. I mean, it's when you really get down to it, it's between Nico Hoerner and Nick Madrigal. But when you really get down to it, it's actually going to be Jason Kipnis versus Lurie Garcia. But you could have Danny Mendick against, I don't know, Daniel Descalso, Robel Garcia.
And if the bases are loaded, you want Bodie at the plate.
And are you including Bodie as a possible second baseman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Are they going to re-sign Zobrist? It's confusing to look at this. I would say Kipnis, there's got to be a reason they gave him a contract, right? And that's because they don't have someone. But I'll go with Nico Hoerner eventually being the guy for the Cubs. I just don't know if it's happening right away. And I think the fact that they have so many guys. I mean, who's making this team, right? Is Kipnis making the team? Is he? Did they sign him to be a stopgap type guy? Or is he on a minor league deal and can't play anymore because he can't hit? Is Robel Garcia a great story that he got up? Is he making the team? Is there a role for Daniel Descalso on this team? These are interesting questions
to
ask.
You really hope not if you're a Cubs fan.
About your roster. Yeah, I think
there really wasn't one last year.
Lurie Garcia is what you would call a utility man. He just can play anything, play everywhere. So he'll get his turn. He's probably first on the list for the White Sox going into the camp. I'm very curious to see Nick Madrigal because everyone you talk to keeps telling you, well, you really haven't seen a player like this. There really aren't players like this in baseball anymore. He's a guy that he's all about contact. He never strikes out, and he can get on base, but he's not a power guy, and he plays pretty good defense. So I'm kind of, as much as I love Leury and there is a place for him on this roster, I'm kind of hoping that it's Nick Madrigal. But I'll say it comes down to Nick Madrigal versus Nico Hoerner, and I'm going to go with Nick Madrigal right now.
Nick Madrigal is the answer because he's the fourth overall pick of the draft. You don't pick a guy that high unless he has a special skill set. And what he does in a special way is he makes contact and he hits for average and he's going to be on base. And he's going to be a guy that you can rely on at the top of that order at the day that they make him a major leaguer. And maybe that day is opening day, but I have a lot of confidence in this kid because he has done the same thing in the same manner at every level of baseball that he's ever played. And I know some people who know him from way back in college and just see the way that he prepares. I think the South Side, or Chicago in general, they're going to love this kid. And I would not be surprised at all if he is the best second baseman in Chicago for a while. Now, the most proven is Jason Kipnis. The most curious is probably Nico Hoerner. I don't know if he's a second baseman. I think he's probably a natural shortstop. I think he could play center field. He's a good enough athlete to move around. I don't want to say he's Chris Bryant, but he has that kind of versatility. So I would not necessarily lock him into that position long term, whereas I think definitely Nick Madrigal is that guy you can see penciled in, or maybe written in ink into that lineup card every day at second base at the top of the order for the Sox for years to come. So as much as my David Bodie love kind of makes me wonder and gives me pause, the answer is Nick Madrigal.
Well, I would love to think that the answer is Nick Madrigal, and maybe at some point during the season it will be the answer, but I don't think we can call a guy who doesn't have one major league at bat under his belt the best second baseman in Chicago. I think from what we have seen so far at the highest level, it's not going to be David Bodie or Descalso. You know, Garcia, as you said, Molly, is a utility guy. He's not somebody you want starting often. You kind of want him in there as a pinch runner, defensive replacement, you know, fourth outfielder, you know, an extra infielder. He can kind of do it all. He's a useful guy to have, but I wouldn't call him the best second baseman. I think from what Horner showed last year in a very limited role at age 22. Also another first-round pick, so you know, keep that in mind as well. He's a player who has a lot of potential, and the Cubs have a lot of hope in. I would say right now, Nico Horner would be the best second baseman on either side of town. And I'm hoping it will be Madrigal. I'm thinking it will be at some point. I think that's the best-case scenario here. And what I want to see in both camps, both Cubs and White Sox camp, is a fair, open competition for these jobs. So ideally, on opening day, Horner is starting at second base for the Cubs, and Madrigal is starting at second base for the White Sox. I want it to be a fair competition. I want them to show out and have the best spring training that they can each have, and I want them both up here on opening day, and I really hope that that happens.
I agree with you, Kevin. I can't say Nick Madrigal is the best second baseman in Chicago if he hasn't had any time on the major league level just yet. I love what we saw from Nico Horner. Yes, the sample size is very limited, but 20 games, he hit .282, .741 OPS, 17 RBIs, and looked good playing defense. He played some shortstop, looked good, but yeah, I think with Javi at shortstop, I think he is your second baseman of the future, and I love his versatility, as you pointed out, David. He could even do some outfield work for you. So the potential for Nico Horner is sky high, but it's also sky high for a guy like Nick Madrigal. David, as you pointed out, the fourth overall pick in the year he was drafted. So there's a lot of potential for second baseman here on the south side, but I'm picking Horner.
Well, of all the names that have been thrown out here, I think we're up to at least 8, if not 10 names. We've named 10 different people who could vie for this position. Nico Horner better be the best baseball player of the 10 names that we've put out there. And I just said baseball player. And this year it might be at second base. In the future, Nick Madrigal better be the best second baseman, because Nick Madrigal, I believe, can only play second base at this level, right? So he needs to be the best second baseman if this is all going to work out for everybody over 35th and Shields. Now, if things go the way I hope they go, then Jason Kipnis will be the answer. Nobody answered this part of the question. He will be the selection for the All-Chicago team. Jason Kipnis.
Oh, I answered it. Okay. I said Nick Madrigal.
I said Nick Madrigal.
Why are you putting Horner, who was drafted 14th, in the same draft that Nick Madrigal was drafted fourth ahead of Madrigal
on
the timetable?
I don't know that Nick Madrigal is going to play second. I need to know that. This is the problem. Tell me who's starting at second base this year for the 35th and Shields.
I think Leary will start until they bring up Madrigal.
But why are they bringing up Madrigal?
Well, because the service
things
time.
Aren't going
they
right.
They
or
might
the service
not.
Time's kicked
he can
off.
Hit.
Or?
He's good.
Hit.
He's on his way.
Then why shouldn't he?
He'll
then
be
he
up
be
this
here
year.
Day one.
I agree.
That's
I think,
the argument.
Well, the I think
real
the argument,
argument
Dustin,
here is the real question. The real thing to sink our teeth into is you know, if Nick Madrigal is not there on day one, I need an explanation.
Well,
I'm with you.
I'm not arguing, but it's service time is the explanation. What I'm saying to you is, when a guy's not a power hitter, I don't think you need to worry about service time.
Forget
with him.
Service time. I'm with you too.
But
bring him up. Bring him up.
3 years from now, yeah. Nick Madrigal better be the best second baseman of the 8 or 10 names that have been thrown out here.
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game?
I mean, it's about baseball. Yeah.
Or did you get here late?
Tom Verducci, writing for SI.com, suggested a new playoff format would likely include every team in baseball playing a home and away series with every other team, which would mean standardized rules, including a DH in both leagues. Would that help baseball, in your opinion?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, smart guy, good proposal, great writer. One new playoff proposal per week, I think, is enough for me. I think that the way that he talked about the standardization of the DH in the next couple of years makes a lot more sense. It probably is a lot more realistic because if Major League Baseball adopts the playoff proposal that was leaked this week and that was discussed as far as increasing the number of playoff teams by 2 in both leagues, then making the DH in the National League, that would be the ideal time to do both. So I'm all for that. I'm all for increasing the pace of play. I'm all for increasing the interest in cities that may not have, you know, their teams in pennant races now currently. I think that would reduce the tendency and the inclination to want to tank. So, yeah, this one has some merit. It's very interesting to consider. But I think the one that I read earlier this week probably has more validity to it.
I think that what I like about this, and I've read a few different stories from people, I think when you change rules, when you change the way you're operating, I think this is what he's talking about. He's saying that if indeed you were to change the playoff thing, that you then have to look at what it means for all these teams. Well, you'll probably end up going to an NBA type thing where the schedule becomes more balanced. And if you do that, don't you have to play by the same rules? So therefore, it would seem that the DH is coming in 2 years. So I don't know that we have spent enough time, or baseball has spent enough time, contemplating all the differences and all the changes that eventually occur because you change the playoff structure. So I don't know. I guess if you're changing the playoffs because you're trying to get younger people interested, does scoring more runs follow if you have more DHs, if you have the National League with DHs? And does that make the games longer? Could you somehow be winding up with even longer games? And are you dealing with what the real issue is with these young people? It's not about the playoffs and teams. You know, the playoff expansion would stop a lot of teams from just tearing it down. So you got to respond to that idea somehow. We've had way too many teams, half the league, trying not to win is far too much. So they're looking for ways to get beyond that. But are they looking at how that will affect things moving forward? I'm not sure.
You know, I liked the original wild card format where, you know, one team from each division would get in and then there'd be one wild card team. I liked it a lot. I've also enjoyed the implementation. Thank you. Sorry. Of the second wild card. I think the one game playoff, you know, you can call it a coin flip, you know, and the Cubs were done wrong by it a couple years ago. I'm sure Cub fans don't like it because of that, but I think it's a very intriguing, exciting thing at the very start of the playoffs to kind of get it going a little bit. So I don't think the playoffs need a major overhaul or anything like that. I don't think changing up the playoffs drastically is going to magically create, you know, an attendance boom and a TV ratings boom or anything like that. What's going to get more people involved in baseball is stars and marketing and exciting play. And what's going to get people to the ballpark is if you don't have to pay $70 for a ticket and $12 for a beer and $6 for a hot dog. These billionaires have enough bloody money as it is. They can cut a little bit off the top, make it more affordable for the average person to go out to a baseball game with their kids and their girlfriend or their boyfriend or whomever and enjoy it at an affordable rate. I think you would see attendance skyrocket. And just because, you know, somebody wouldn't be able to buy an extra third yacht, you know, this next year, you're going to see attendance go up, and that's going to be better for the game in general.
Well, this might sound lame and old school and all that, but I do like the strategy involved in the National League when you do have to figure out how you're going to work an at-bat with the pitcher. But you know what? A DH in both leagues increases the level of offense from both teams, the offensive output. It increases the level of play. So in terms of that part of the idea, I think it would be smart. It would be wise to implement the DH in both leagues.
Be great for the Cubs. Okay? It'd be absolutely great for the Cubs. Now, just so I understand, I did not get to read this article yet. So every team would play every other team in a home and away as part of this. Is that accurate?
Yes.
That I do not like at all. Because if that's the case, then we should just get rid of the American League and the National League. Okay? We should just have baseball. Okay, just have baseball. Have the divisions, I guess.
That's the argument you make in the NBA.
Right. I mean, if you're going to play everybody, then what's the point of having an American League and a National League? They've already ruined Interleague by playing too many games in Interleague and playing it all year long. Right.
But you're a proponent of DH, right? So how do you have American League and National League? What once you introduce the DH?
Why if you introduce the DH, you have to change leagues?
Well, I'm saying it's all the same then. But there's no difference between the two types of baseball.
Sure there is. One's called the American League and one's called the National League.
But that's it.
One's called the AFC and one's called the NFC. They play by the same rules, right? In football, there's the American Football Conference and the National Football Conference.
If they play by different rules in baseball, they are distinct. And if you bring
I'm
in
fine
the DH,
getting, listen, I'm
I know
all
you want it
because
of Schwarber.
DH.
Yeah, I know.
Especially right now for the Cubs.
You were always against it until Schwarber.
By
exactly.
the time they adopt it, Schwarber will be 38.
Perfect time to be a DH.
And he'll still be able to hit balls on the Wrigley field. Put another one up on that Budweiser sign, why don't you?
That's a good question, Dave. I think
it's been reported by the NFL's website that the Bengals want to work with Andy Dalton to facilitate a trade for the player and his $17-plus million contract. If you were a GM, perhaps a GM with a local team, would you deal for Dalton and pay the final year of his deal in order to ensure getting him, and how would you handle it?
I would wait for him to be cut. Why would you? They're not trying to facilitate anything other than helping themselves get something for Andy Dalton. If they're going to go out and draft Joe Burrow, then Andy Dalton is he has no gig. He has nothing. They're not going to sit on $17 million for a year, so they're going to cut him. So why would you help them in any way? Do you have to be the first? The idea is there are teams that want Andy Dalton so bad they want to they'll trade for him because they want to be the first guy to get him. I think he's not that good, and I don't think you plan on starting him from day one, so I would wait.
I would wait, but I would also call. I would find out what they're asking and how unrealistic it is, and I would gauge the rest of the league to find out the interest if you could, if there are ways to figure that stuff out, and there are if you're an NFL executive. It depends on how much Bill Lazor is going to go into Ryan Pace's office and pound on the table and demand or say that, you know what, we have to get this guy because I can win and score points with this guy. I would not want to pay him $17 million a year because if you do that, you automatically are telling him you are our starter and you are a guy that probably is going to go into training camp as getting more money than Mitch Trubisky. So I would probably play it out and let it go and see if you can win a bidding war if that in fact happens after he gets cut, because if they draft Joe Burrow number one, he's going to get cut.
You know, I don't love Andy Dalton as a player, and I certainly don't love him for $17 million. Mully, I think I'm with you. I wouldn't mind him on the Bears. I think he's probably better than Mitch Trubisky at this point. He's certainly done more. He's been in the playoffs. He's had some good seasons before. If you could get him on a cheaper deal, you absolutely explore that. And you don't take the risk, though, of $17 million in cap space, especially with the Bears, who are already kind of in a rough spot cap-wise as it is.
I agree. I don't think you take on that money. You can wait. I agree with you, Mully. You don't have to do that right now because, for me, he's not on the top of the list of the guys I would like to see compete for the job against Mitchell Trubisky. I'd rather see, you know, Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, Josh Rosen, even Cam Newton ahead of Dalton.
Wow. Now there's some talkability right there. It's 5:59:27 mark. I don't know that we have time to argue that right now. But the guy that I find interesting that Ray did throw out there is David Carr. Okay. That's a guy that I know it's not the answer to the question. So the answer to the question is no, no, and no. But, you know, let's talk about David Carr in a Bears uniform.
It's Derek.
That's all right.
Him too.
He keeps saying that.
I mean, we could do this all day if we want to.
Okay, well, he just corrected you. I don't know if you
I know. I'm just saying we could do this all day.
I
like
we
Derek
had,
Carr too, though.
I thought we had to go to break.
I would like to do it all day.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Joey Bosa on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.